Here is a longtime coach in the NBA, ESPN and ESPN Radio NBA analyst, one of our favorites, PJ Carlissimo, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. How you doing, PJ?
Excellent. Brian, Gord, how are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing well. We're wondering about dealing with scrums, and you've dealt with many throughout your career. You ever tell a beat reporter to go get a high school coaching job before they start analyzing the job?
No, I stopped short of that. I usually bit my tongue.
But yeah. Plus,
I had so many things to defend anyhow, I had to be careful.
Did it bug you, though? I'm curious, PJ, if it did bug you that people that, you know, have a passing knowledge of the sport would question, you know, your decisions and your results, if you want, when you had a long history of doing it.
Well, no, not if the facts were right. Yeah, you know, I mean, you can't say anything when people are correct. You know, like if somebody said, like, you know, why did you, that was a stupid thing or something like that, you're rethinking to yourself or saying, yeah, it was. It's when they're incorrect and the amount of time it would take to explain it or something like that, you can't, like, be smug and say, yeah, but if you ever had to make decisions, you know, and understand there's other repercussions. It's not just, but you were frustrated at times. That was usually more stories, ongoing stories or columns, as opposed to a post-game thing. Post-game things you can usually, you know, deflect or get out of it quickly. I'm sure I flew off nights I shouldn't have on occasion too. I was worse in college, I think, than I was in the NBA. I was better in the NBA.
Well, and to that point, I mean, it can feel personal when it's, you know, a columnist or a radio host
I started up the other way. I had my first two of my first three head jobs in college were total rebuilding situations where literally I won one, two, or three games the first year. So I learned humility right away and that, you know, I wasn't John Wooden Jr. And it's a good way to start. Sometimes people are just fortunate and they get good jobs right from the beginning and hardly ever go through the other. I really think it's a good experience to you know, handle the losses and all the other things, even sometimes to getting fired. It gives you a better perspective than people that have just enjoyed nothing but success and they kind of, you know, forget. They, you know, some of us, I'll put myself in that other shoe for a second, you know, think you invented basketball, and it's, you know, it's about the players. Obviously you have some control over it, but I think when you come up the other way, it gives you a much better perspective and a much clearer understanding of what's really going on.
Well, in terms of it getting personal, it feels like we're already there with Chris Paul, and it might go right over the falls tonight if Phoenix loses and he doesn't perform well. And he has not performed that well. Like he played really well in Game 1, you know, pretty good in Game 2. But his turnovers on the road in Milwaukee have just, you know, they've been egregious at times in his fourth quarter play. And Drew Holiday is making his life very difficult. But that's a battle I think he should win or at least saw off. And he has not been doing that recently. And it feels as if it's Chris Paul's fault that Phoenix is in the position they're in. Where do you stand on that?
Well, games 3 and 4, he struggled. I mean, that was so atypical of him. And those turnovers were enormous. They were really big. The games all blend together now. I think it was Game 4. He had the two right at the end. I mean, there's no question how, you know, how big those turnovers were. I actually thought he bounced back with a pretty good Game 5. I thought he played well. He shot it well. He had 11 assists. He only had one turnover. I thought Game 5, both teams played particularly offensively so well. But I thought he was much better in Game 5. It's what he's been unable to do, and I think partially by choice, that, you know, Drew's given him so much, and it's not just Drew, it's mainly Drew for sure, but it's been a lot of Chris Middleton and a lot of P.J. Tucker also. I mean, they're just beating him up and, you know, picking him up full court anytime they can, anytime it's a dead ball situation or after a free throw or anytime they can get into bumping him. And one of the things that he would do more of in the past, and he's done it bits and pieces in this one, but not as much, and I probably should give Giannis credit for it, is just go by. When people are going to play you like that, it does make it very difficult for you to get into the offense, you know, like to get the offense started where you want to get it started and get the ball to whom you want to get it to. But sometimes when people pressure that much, you got to just go and score. And he's fully capable of doing that. I'm a little surprised he hasn't done more of that, where he just says, to hell with it. If they're going to play me like this, I'm just going to go by the guy, and I'm going to shoot that little 8-10-footer where he gets just inside the free throw line. Or on occasion, remember even back to games one and two, he even got all the way to the rim a couple times in game one and two. Because you know, he would just come off the pick and roll, and if the big didn't know what to do, whether it was Giannis or Brook Lopez, he'd just attack him. And he hasn't attacked as much off the dribble as I thought he would, given as much as they're pressuring him in gambling. But I'm not going to be surprised, frankly, if he has a great game tonight and is, you know, instrumental in forcing a game seven. So he's, you know, his body of work has been so good. Those games three and four, I wouldn't debate you at all on it. But I really think he's been good or very good in one, two, and five, and really struggled in three and four, which I never would have anticipated coming into this series.
PJ, I don't even know what to say about the stat. I can't get my head around it, and I want to know if you've ever seen anything like it. But entering play tonight, Chris Paul's teams have lost 11 consecutive playoff games when Scott Foster has officiated, and he's one of the officials tonight.
He was in game three. I just think it's an aberration. I just think there are teams in the league, and I was the same way, like when we would rate officials. There are, you would think, and you might disagree with my original premise, that most of the 30, I'll say most to cover myself, most of the 30 head coaches in the NBA are intelligent or semi-intelligent people, and yet we'd be sitting in a room, and I'll just make up a person. You know, they will say that so-and-so official, Joe Jones, you'll listen to five people say, he's great, I love him, I'd take him anytime, home or away, I really think he's good, got great judgment. And then you hear five or ten other guys go, he's the worst official in the league. I don't know how he even gets games. And it's all a product of what's happened when he's refed your games and the circumstances. You know, like if you did the research, you might find out that the guy who thinks he's terrible, you know, six of the games that he worked were against the Lakers, the Celtics, and somebody else where you were going to lose anyhow. And I think there's a little bit of that in here. Scott Foster in playoffs gets big games, and even within a series, when they assign games, he gets the tough ones. He might get the one when it's down 2-0 and the team's got to win to get back to 2-1. So I think there's a lot of that in it. I think if you went back and looked at those games, you'd find some of them were, you know, play. I don't know whether they were all, I know they weren't all Phoenix, whether no. They were just Phoenix and Oak City, or went back to Houston and went back even further. It's surprising. It's one-sided. I totally agree. But I would think I'm being right in saying most of the head coaches in the league, I'll say this, I shouldn't say it because some of them are young. I'll say most of the coaches in the league, of the 30 coaches in the league, if they could pick a crew for a game, Scott Foster would be one of the three they'd pick. So, you know, the number is an accurate number, I assume. It makes no sense whatsoever. I totally agree with that. But I don't think it will be a factor tonight. If they win or lose, I don't think it's going to be because Scott Foster's working the game.
Chatting with PJ Carlissimo, ESPN NBA analyst, Game 6 NBA Finals tonight. Once the series is over, could end tonight, we quickly delve into the offseason, and it's going to be a pretty wild one up here in Toronto. They're going to have the fourth pick in the draft, which may be on the move. There's a lot of smoke out there that it may be a movable pick for the Raps. But Kyle Lowry is going to be right at the forefront of all this, and we don't know what's going to happen with Kyle. There was a report earlier this week linking him to New Orleans. I can make sense of that because I think they're getting desperate. I think they realize we can't do what we did with Anthony Davis and others. We got to get Zion cooking here. And Kyle, to me, is a perfect example of a guy you'd want to bring in with leadership, the grit that he plays with, the determination he plays with. Does that make sense to you, PJ? Could you see New Orleans and Kyle Lowry being
I could see New Orleans and a lot of teams, frankly, in the league, but particularly New Orleans, looking for a CP fix like what happened with Chris Paul in Phoenix this year. the ideal guy to come in and you know, teach some of these young guys. It's about defense. It's about playing together, you know, and on and on and on, and reinforce the coaching as opposed to what happened with Stan Van Gundy this year and what happened with Alvin Gentry. And, you know, instead of changing coaches every time, if they get some veteran leadership in there and somebody that knows how to play, but you know, knows how to play basketball and is going to make sure that players understand, hey guys, if we don't play defense and if we don't play together, then it doesn't matter how talented one or two of our guys are. So yeah, but I, again, you could make that case for a number. I have no idea who's got money to trade for Kyle or sign him or however the heck they would get him there, but I can understand a ton of teams liking him. I'm more, and help me out, because I've been kind of tunneled in here. I've been back and forth with Vegas with the Olympic team, the U.S. Olympic team before they left. Is Masai's situation resolved itself yet?
Because
important or as important as anything else that's going on in Toronto.
Yeah, it's a little bit concerning up here, PJ. I'm sure you can imagine. Because
very definitely
it hasn't gone anywhere, which I do think is actually, I can spin that positively, because I think if he was determined to leave, he would have left by now, or news would have been out that the talks had broken down between him and Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. I don't think the finals factors in terms of a distraction. You know, like, when does an executive factor into whether or not people are going to watch Game 6 tonight? I mean, I don't think that's a part of the program here. So the longer it goes, actually, I think it becomes more likely he stays in the world.
Yeah, I mean, selfishly, you know, there's always been a good spot in my heart for Toronto from the 1 year I spent there. And I, to be honest, I love Mr. T. I can't believe they won't get it resolved. I don't know. It really is going to come down to, I think, what Masai wants to do. I mean, I can't imagine they don't want it. You never know what's going on behind the scenes, but I can't imagine they don't want him there. And if they want him there, I'm sure they can make that happen. To me, it would only be a question of, is Masai, you know, maybe eyeing somewhere else and just sees it long term or whatever as a better situation for him. I don't have any knowledge of that. Don't read into that at all. But I mean, other than that, I can't see how that's not going to get resolved.
Yeah.
Whatever it's going to take. It's been such a great partnership and will be. You know, it's not like they're far off right now where they are. I still like an awful lot of the pieces that are in place there from Nick on down and the players. So I think it should get worked out and would be. And again, Kyle's a tough decision. I love Kyle Lowry, and I can understand, you know, I could hear both arguments, you know, very convincingly why we would do this, because we're, you know, looking further down the line or whatever. But that makes it even tougher. But God, who do you want making that decision other than Masai? So
yeah, you're preaching to the choir on that. Believe me, everyone in Toronto is. I've never come across anything like this. I mean, it's unanimous. Everyone wants Masai back. There isn't one contrarian who's coming up with a take. And maybe it's in the best interest if Masai walks. No one wants to see it happen, and hopefully it won't. Game 6 tonight, NBA Finals. Enjoy that one, PJ, and enjoy the upcoming offseason. We'll do it again soon. We always appreciate you taking time for us.
No, great being with you guys. Thank you very much. See you, Bryce. See you, Gord.
Thanks, PJ. There he is, PJ Carlissimo, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Don't be nervous having your trade-in appraised. Maple Toyota makes it easy, offering the maximum value for your vehicle. Get your no-obligation appraisal today, mapletoyota.com.
Can I tell you a PJ Carlissimo story?
Yes.
Amazing. So in 1992, I went to Portland, Oregon to cover the Tournament of the Americas, Olympic qualifying. Might have been 91, actually. It was the Dream Team. Mm-hmm. It was all the biggies for the Dream Team. I think Chuck Daly was the head coach and all this. So we were trying to get some, I was calling the games with Jack Donahue, and we're trying to get some information. And so there's other tournament games going on. And they said, well, PJ Carlissimo will talk to you, assistant coach. I'm like, okay. So I go and I watch this game. I'm waiting for him outside the dressing room. He doesn't show up. So I go back in the stands to watch the rest of the game, and like half an hour later, he comes walking and says, hey, I've been looking for you. Like, I was nobody from Canada, honestly, like, to him. And he couldn't have been more generous and kind with his time. Really, like, he and Mike Krzyzewski were both on that staff. Mm-hmm. But Carlissimo could not have been more helpful to help a young broadcaster who from another country, who had, you know, he had no relationship with and never would. But it was a really nice thing.
Yeah, he's always gracious with his time. He comes on, he always brings the energy and the heat, and he's got something to say, and he's an awesome guest. And again, we mentioned it earlier, goes out for dinner 365 days a year. Every day he goes out for dinner. I love that stat. It's my favorite stat.
I'm not far off that. Not every day, but.